Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The beauty of live, whatever it is that we're doing. You are joining us here on the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. I am James Whelan, Managing Director of the Barclay Pearce Capital Wealth Management Team. I am joined by Heath Moss of HLM Investments. Heath, how are you now?
Good morning, James. Good morning, everyone. How are you?
Mate, I'm absolutely cranking on. We got Chris Weston over from Pepperstone. He's furiously putting on a pair of pants, maybe a shirt, as he joins us. He's just realised I'm going over video on this for everyone who's watching on YouTube. If you can hear that in the background, that's exactly what that is. While we sort of stagger around looking at that, I'm just going to put Chris on mute. Hang on a second. Let's just mute. I'm just going to mute Chris Weston until he gets himself dressed and he's presentable. This is the best one we've ever done. Look, we got Chris Weston on because we want to talk about the 8,000 central banks that decided that they wanted to speak this week, and some of the big ones that that were moving markets, and some of the big ones that weren't. 17 years of negative interest rates from Japan, basically almost the length of my entire career, and now they're not. What sort of volatility is that going to cause? What's not? So that's pretty much been the topic of discussion. I also want to talk about OMG tote balls. WTF is going on with our jobs numbers, job creation numbers, and our unemployment rate. We ain't seeing no cut, or is it seasonality, as some people might say as well. If we can try and jam that in, we'll get a little bit of football in as well. But I want to start off by saying this is my bracket in the NCAA tournament challenge brought to you by ESPN. And it was blown up within about the first 2 hours of March Madness that started this morning. Today is the 22nd of March, 2024. I'm going to unmute Chris Weston, see if he's back on deck now. Oh, he's chosen to mute himself. That's even better. That's good. Okay, a bit of professionalism. Come on. Okay, amateur hour out here on the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. So Heath, how are you going?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. Been a very busy week, pumping out client reviews and listening to central banks, and just watching the market rip. Still, I mean, it's been good. I mean, markets continue to do what they're doing, and which is going higher. I mean, the SPX hit a new high last night again. The XJO is not far behind. So, yeah. Anyway, did you want to rip into a quick market thing while we wait for Westy to get himself presentable?
Yeah, okay. Here we go. I'm going to add that to the stage. Okay. Here's Heath Moss of HLM Investments with the market report. All right, Westy's back, so he's just going to have to... Hang on, we'll get it. No, I'll wait till he's ready to go.
Okay, beautiful.
He's got his wearing shirt. All right, Heath, you hit yours up, and then I'll add Chris Weston in, and he can add his 2 cents in it. Hold on. Chris Weston from Pepperstone. Here he is. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
How you going, Westy?
Going well, boys, here?
Yeah, not bad, mate. You look great.
Nice.
You look
nice really, to see your shirt
look
on.
Really sharp. Are you wearing pants?
I've got really bad Wi-Fi connections out here in the middle of the bush, so I'm trying to see how I go.
Mate, no problem. If you want to switch off your camera, you go ahead and switch off your camera, okay? We'll go back to genuine 2020 COVID sort of situations where it's audio only to get to beat the buffering, okay? So if you want to do that, you go ahead and you do whatever you want to do, okay, pal?
I'm trying to do this on the laptop. It might come out better.
Okay, do whatever you're going to do. I'm going to let Heath talk his side of the story, and then we'll get your side of the story, and then we'll see who's right and who's wrong. Heath, over to you.
All right, beautiful. So quickly, I'll get cracking on this. We got the SPX here. It's a beautiful chart. I mean, you can't ask for more. Ripped 2.5% this week, I think, the SPX so far. Let me check my notes. Yeah, 2.4%. NASDAQ is up 2.9%, so almost 3%. And the XJO, Australian Battler, is about up 1.5%. We've had a little bit of dip there. We're not as quite at a new record yet as the US markets and other markets around the world, but we're getting close. I think Nikkei hit a new record again yesterday on the back of the BOJ stuff. But anyway, yeah, it all centered around central bank meetings this week. We had the BOJ starter, then the RBA, into the Fed, into the Bank of England, and the Swiss Bank as well, which was a surprise. But we've seen some Chinese numbers come out this week, which were very encouraging, and that's helped our market, obviously, and iron ore. If I bring up the iron ore chart, I will find it in a sec. There it is. We see a small bounce there from our lows. It did dip below 100 for a little bit, but it's back up towards 110 again. Industrial numbers for China were up 7%. Retail up 5.5%, and fixed investment asset investment, up 4.2%. They were all above estimates. Are China starting to turn things around? It may be the case. It's the second lot of decent macro data we've got in the last couple of weeks. We had their trade figures the other week that were really, really good. And we've had a sort of a note out from the PBOC and that saying that they need to maintain a minimum of 8% credit growth or money supply growth over the year to reach that 5% growth target. So maybe markets will start seeing using that as a bit of a bellwether for things coming forward going forward, because we know it takes a while for that money to flow through to the economy. But we do have a lot of bond issuance to hit the property market over there. And whatnot. So, on the back of the central bank stuff, we had where are we? I am looking for my 10-year. There we go. We've had the 10-year. It saw some strength leading into the meeting and has come off a little bit. And you see that resistance there around the 4.35% mark. I mean, if it breaks that, it's gonna blow. It's gonna rip higher. If it can't break it, then it's gonna rip lower. It's as simple as that.
Right, I mean, I'll put a flag stick on that one, and I'll come back to it, Westy. I'm going to ask you about the 10-year in a sec and see where you think it's going to rip or grip or something. Okay.
So
just marking where I heard and letting my guest know what's going on. Okay.
I'll hand it over to Westy while we've got him and while he's got good internet. And we'll chat a little bit central banks, shall we? Wissy, what was your thoughts on the BOJ to start with?
I think, if you'd gone back sort of 4 or 5 months ago and said to a lot of people on social media that we were going to see a move out of not a very unconventional policy or a giant step away from it, there was a sort of a giant belief that we were going to see the world end and things were going to be very disorderly in the JGB markets, Japan swaps, and that hasn't been the case. In fact, the opposite is true. Mm. So I think that speaks to the fact that, dare I say it, the Bank of Japan's communication with the market is absolutely spot on. It was so well telegraphed, all the actions that we saw, that it was leaked in the Nikkei and all the press that we were going to see these actions. And ultimately, they've moved away to zero interest rate policy. The market at the time didn't see, a sustained move in rates. It was just sort of a token issue. We might see another one later this year, data dependent. But ultimately, the move away from yield curve control was then offset by the fact that they were going to continue buying JGBs at around 6 trillion yen a year to suppress any kind of major volatility, at least in the short term. So, I think that was the side effect. But I think it was so well telegraphed that, kudos to Ueda and the team that they've managed to get us away without any massive tightening of financial conditions. I think, what we've now seen is a situation where Ueda's made it pretty clear to us that there is further weakening in the yen will actually play quite radically into their thought process and their reaction function. So, I think what we've seen is dollar yen moving up into sort of 152 or into the high 150s, 151s. Mm. And then I think this article that came out in the Nikkei saying that, if the yen weakens materially from here, then... Yeah, if materially weakens from here, then that obviously could increase inflation expectations and propel them to raise rates as a result of that. Or not just that, because obviously the goes through 150 through those recent highs of 150, 190, then sort of brings a closer step for the Ministry of Finance to sort of do the yen intervention. I think that's an interesting one. But I think it was all the actions were generally quite well telegraphed, that we did see a sort of a buy the rumor, sell the fact playing out in the yen. And we could get more hikes this year. I suspect we probably will. But, yeah, it's certainly
it was,
you know, the start of an aggressive rate hiking cyclists.
No,
so
that was going to be my next question.
Do you think this signals, you know, part, start of a hiking cycle, or was it sort of a one and done situation? Let's see how things go with the BOJ.
Yeah, I mean, if it, I think, yeah, they move away from zero negative to zero interest rate policies there. But if you look at the 2 year 2 year JGB, we're trading around 19 basis points, so it hasn't really moved too much. If you look at Japan swaps in terms of, you know, market and pricing for the rest of the year, we're still seeing one more rate hike by the end of the year, but it's certainly not suggestive that we were going to see a significant hiking cycle. I mean, maybe I've seen a few sort of Japan economists who are focused on maybe getting two more rate hikes this year, probably sort of start maybe July and then another one in sort of Q4. But again, you know, you still look at interest rate differentials, you know, whether you're looking at sort of 10-year differentials between Japan and the US or Australia, and either looking on a nominal real basis, and there's still a gulf that's still there. And so you're not going to get that massive repatriation there. I know we're coming into Japan financial year end at the end of this month, which does sort of have implications for the yen. But yeah, look, I mean, I think it's interesting because, yeah, we're still in the wage negotiation territory. I know that we got the Rengo numbers last Friday, and they were pretty good and pretty hot in the market was looking for, and there's still going to be a large element of various unions that are going to be of businesses which are going to come out with their wage numbers over the next week or two, but then the data I think the yen becomes more sensitive to data. The yen has just been an out and out funding currency for the carry trade. That's all you've used it for. But now I think it does it start, the question we've got to ask is, with the Bank of Japan raising rates and showing a propensity, does it become more of a cyclical currency? So better data has more of a sensitivity into the yen. We've not seen that for a while. I suspect it will do.
Yeah, that sort of funding, I didn't think about that. I suppose I'm not mixed up in the FX markets as closely as I used to be. But I didn't think about that. It's a funding currency for everything, and now it's sort of it's lost a bit of that area where it's actually going to be movement based on data.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean,
but I think, yeah,
small moves in the FX market.
The carry trade is premised, on interest rate differentials, but it's also priced on market conditions as well. You know, as soon as you see any kind of volatility pick up, and I know Heath's sort of cringing because he hates the word volatility, but if you see any kind of vol pick up on a cross asset basis, you know, carries unwound pretty quickly, and then people look to buy yen, Swiss franc, and all those factors as well. But like, you've got equities at all-time highs, you've got multi-tights in high-yield credit spreads at the moment. You know, it's still an environment where people will look to do vol-adjusted carry trades in this market. So, you know, do you use the yen, or, given what we saw last night from the Swiss franc, are you starting to perhaps use the Swiss franc more readily as your funding currency? But then again, what do you use to buy? I mean, dollar still offers some good carry. LATAM does as well, but we saw the Mexican central bank start its rate cutting cycle last night again, so that has implications as well. Nothing's ever easy in this world. Paraguay, that's hard to say.
Paraguay cut this morning, I think, as well. Is that a cut?
Brazil did yesterday or something as well.
Yeah.
Brazil.
I'll tell you what, with the economic, now we can sort of switch around to the economic stuff. I mean, let's just talk about the two currencies that are, you know, in our backyard. One is obviously the US being the biggest and the best, but the Aussie dollar as well. You've got to think that with the data that's coming out, I mean, everyone's now talking about three cuts this year, and now it seems like it's tailored out to two cuts. You want to tell us what the market's telling you there, Chris, on where it's two cuts versus three cuts versus what's actually priced in or factored in for this year?
I can do. Yeah, let me just bring up my pricing. I think,
sorry, I've put you on the spot with a few things today, haven't I? No, but that's what professionalism is all about.
That's good. It doesn't take 2 seconds to just switch out.
No, it's okay, mate. We'll just wait.
We haven't seen too much in the way after the employment data. I think the employment data yesterday, whilst it was strong, was completely expected. I mean, every economist was saying, that we were going to get some payback in the numbers we saw yesterday. That's exactly what we saw. So we saw a little bit of rate cut expectations coming out. But I'll give you an idea about what's priced into swaps, not the futures market, the interest rate futures, but the actual Aussie swap. So we've got the next meeting in early May. Nothing's really been priced for that. But where it opens up at the moment, and of course this is dynamic, it's sort of the weighted central case of probabilities is that August, we're pricing in, you know, 16 basis points of cuts. So what's that? Very simplistically, 64% chance that we get a 25 basis point cut in August. And then the, the full rate cuts being priced in for September. So that August-September window is where you're live. And then, and if you go into the end of the year, we've got 38 basis points of cuts being priced. It's about 1.5 rate cuts, of course. Yeah, next week we do get the monthly CPI numbers. That could have some bearing. And then I think if you go into sort of late April, I think it's the 24th, we get the Q1 CPI number. Now that will be the one that I think the RBI will be looking at. So if we get that number coming out in April, you know, I think if depending on the outcome, obviously if it massages down on a court, on a trim mode basis, then look, it probably does open up the door for an August rate cut. As I say, we're pricing at a sort of a 2 in 3 chance at the moment, but I think that CPI number is going to be the big one that obviously we look out for there.
Yeah, I sort of had May penciled in. I thought things were a lot worse than they were. I mean, although yesterday's numbers of 116,000 job ads, it was a little deceiving. If you look at the 3-month rolling, I think it's plus 23K, which, you know, matches what it was in the third quarter last year. So yeah. There's a lot of seasonality. You know, a lot of people are saying it's a lot of people that got jobs that didn't start them until the new year and whatnot, and holidays and you know, all thrown in. And so that December to February period.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Period really is quite tricky in terms of.
And we need to adjust it as well. I mean, immigration is such a big factor. I mean, it's in the US as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of part of the reason, sort of just going on a bit of a segue, but it's part of the reason why Powell really importantly said that, you know, that the strong labor market is not an impediment or a headwind for them to start cutting rates. And I think that was a massive green light yesterday for the equity market. And a lot of what we've been seeing, the strength in the labor market there and the job creation is down to the strong levels of immigration we're seeing. And I think there's a similar dynamic sort of shaping up in Australia as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a beautiful segue into the Fed there, mate. Well done.
professionalism every step of the way.
I saw figures during the week that, the US at the moment, the net immigration from down south is about 3 to 4 million a year, and has been for the last 2 to 3 years, and that's up from around the 800,000 to 900,000 pre-COVID. So there certainly is a huge amount of immigration. It's sort of doing the same as we are here in Australia. I mean, you know, making a big America again, and that's helping obviously their job market, possibly help their family units market, the apartments market, which was thought was going to be in a big trouble this year with huge supply coming online.
This is where you say it's going to also benefit Biden, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, it just happens that a lot of these people down south are big left-wing voters, and, you know, if this someone comes along and says, hey, you can come to my country and we'll give you a lot of social security and set you up, et cetera, then you're probably going to vote for them, aren't you? So, you know, Biden and co are probably making as many of them as citizens or residents, whatever it takes to get them on the voting bill to get them across the line, because it's looking a bit shaky for Biden and co at this stage. That's still tinfoil hat stuff.
Yeah. No, it's actually been factored in. Trump has started coming out with, I mean, if we're talking about this sort of thing, Trump has started coming out with the too big to rig. He loves a catchphrase. I can't stand it, but he and I are very similar with our ability to make a catchy phrase that's
and annoy people.
That's correct. Yes, that as well. Man, Didn't deserve the drive by. I probably did actually, didn't get the number plate of the pass you just checked. No. It's fair call. He's doing with the too big to rig is what he's talking about now. That there has to be, they have to blow their numbers out by so much and win by so much that technically the Democrats can't steal the election from them again, which is what he's saying. It's going to be a fun battle watching two people that should have retired 30 years ago. Both go at it. And anyway, I still call Trump. So if I call Trump, then I say that immediately the people who are on his list are going to get ticked off, and immediately economic hurrah, freedom, deregulation kicks in, and it's off to the races again fairly quickly.
Right, exactly. China's
just going to be tariffs for negotiation.
So pretty much, the same as it is now. I mean, that's probably why markets are ripping, because Trump and Biden are both known quantities. And, no matter who's in, we know what we're going to get for the next 3 to 4 years.
Correct. All right. What else have we got? Do we talk about the bonds, the US bonds? Did we talk about the 10-year?
This is what the 10-year is up on the screen at the moment.
All right. We've got about 3 minutes left. Let's go.
I've got to
be at 11 o'clock, man. I'm trying to run a wealth management company over here, okay? This is.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think it's interesting because, I think we're in a nice spot now. If you look at the 10-year, we sort of 4.35 has been the upper range. The market's been happy to sort of buy into that. And then we've got a nice downside into sort of 4%. So I think we're just carving out a bit of a sideways range. I think it's sort of testament that, to be short duration, into sort of 4.35 is a really tough trade. No one really wants to do it, but you're not really getting the data from the inflation, certainly not from the inflation or from risk more broadly to be really have any kind of conviction about being long duration, which, if you add all the factors that we're seeing, the soft landing is the sort of situation, we're seeing some elements of right tail risk from inflation. It makes us say that right now, if you want to trade the 10-year as a future, then, you're trading a tight range. That said, I think, the big one that we need to watch out for is the data. We've got the core PCE next week, and we've got Christopher Wallace speaking next week. He is the most influential man as the architect of forward-looking policy on the Fed boards. He's been responsible for two big pivots in the market. So do keep an eye. He speaks on the 28th at 9 a.m. next week. So he's a big one, but we get core PCE next week. The big one, though, which could change this range, though, is going to be on the 8th we get the payrolls number, but it's going to be the CPI print, which comes out 2 days later. And, while the Fed at the moment have said that they're somewhat happy to look through and tolerant of the recent inflation numbers that we've been seeing, I don't think they will be with a third. So if we get another core CPI number, 40 basis points, all those factors, super core, still fairly hot, then I think the Fed will say, hang on, three of them is a trend. And I think right tail risks, see that duration goes up, term premiums increase, and we break out to the top side. But I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but it is the risk that we need to look at.
That's beautiful. No one ever asks, and the people who ask for a definitive, is this or is this not a prediction that you're going to have guaranteed? It's not. It's just going to be the balance of probabilities where you weigh it up.
100%.
Cheapest side of the financial media organization do have a tendency to want binary outcomes and then pull people up when they're wrong, and it's cheap. And we don't engage in that sort of cheap nonsense. Okay, it's all
underpants jokes. The only people who know the future are people trading insider traders, right? So the only thing that we can look at is the distribution of outcomes. Like, what is the probability of this, and we try and skew. We look for a skew in that probability, and we trade the skew. That's kind of what we do. But we look at risks, and I represent the trading world. You both represent the more sort of longer term investment world. But do you know what we do? We manage risk, and that's a commonality. And we look ahead at things that could move the dial. And I think the CPI print, if it's hot again, could move the dial.
CPI print hot, rates up, bonds off, obviously, because they do move inversely to each other.
I think that the market's happy. Yeah. The market's happy and risk is happy as long as central bankers are still showing a propensity to cut, which of course is what Powell wants to cut. But they're fine with rate cuts coming out of the market because of better growth dynamics. They're not happy with rate cuts coming out because of inflation forces. That's where we pay a higher equity risk premium, I think.
Say that again. Just for the kids at the back.
Well, it's just, yeah, so the equity market has a higher risk premium attached to it if we see higher inflation forces coming through. That's something that, that takes away from the Fed put. This idea that, that central banks can ease to stimulate in any kind of adverse shock, well, that's fine. But it's not fine if inflation is starting to move up again. I'm not saying that's going to happen. The script is that inflation comes down to target over a period of time. But anything that challenges that script is where we start, you know, failing to price risk well. And that's where you have to see high volatility in the market. So, yeah, I think we're okay, as I say, with growth dynamics, seeing rate cuts being priced out. But if growth is there and thereabouts, but we see inflation expectations moving up and realized inflation moving up, then the market won't like that, as I say. So that's why we look at the next CPI print. It's a risk.
Okay. Fantastic. Excellent work, mate. Show me copper, and then we'll talk about football, and then we'll go.
Copper.
While you're pulling up copper, I'm going to say that my first 2 days this week were spent at the Mining News Select Small Cap Mining Conference. And gee, there's some diamonds in the rough out there that need a little bit of love, that have actually got some really good stuff, some really good holdings. If anyone wants to know more about those particular things, let me know. We've also got our Australian Investment Summit. We are in partnership with the London Stock Exchange to be able to do our summit over in London. We'll be over there in the summertime. Can't wait. Might get a few sets of tennis in over there while I'm there too. I'm expecting everyone to head over and wave the flag over there for the Aussies over there abroad. It's going to be a sensational thing, a great tour. Thank you very much to the London Stock Exchange for all the work that they've done. And I'm looking forward to many happy partnerships of putting good Aussie names onto the LSE for that to happen. Now, copper.
You can see it there, mate. It's up on your screen. It's pulled back a little bit from where it was.
That's a pennant. That's a bullish pennant.
Yep, it's about 4.06 a pound. Thanks. At the moment. So still looking quite good. Did get to about 4.15 or so, I think it was. But yeah, a bit of a pullback there. As long as the narrative stays the same with copper, I can see this, you know, just grinding higher, unless we see some materially soft data out of China.
It's a supply. It's a flag. Whatever.
Yeah, it's a flag.
This is an out and out supply issue, though. It's not a demand story. Yes. Demand story that you're seeing, is it, Heath? I mean, I'm just seeing Chinese smelters cutting back or suggesting that they are going to cut back. You know, in an already tight market. So, you know, when the big guys are, you know, threatening to cut back on production, then you know it just gives a massive tailwind. Then I think if you chuck in CTAs or trend following funds who trade copper futures because it's going up, you know, then you get a sort of a perfect storm, I guess.
You do.
I guess it's the same as it has been. You're not seeing the same thing in crude and also to James as well. I mean, Christ, you can go into cocoa, which has been having an exponential move. It's the whole commodity scene is breaking out because of supply issues, right? Or lack of.
Look, this and history it's the same costs in... $800.
It will soon.
In this economy.
No, it is a bit like uranium. It's a supply crunch issue, smelting. They can't get a hold of, you know, plausible and profitable concentrate at a reasonable price. Fees therefore crashed in the last 6 months compared to where they were. And it's not going to get any easier for those smelters because they've got 1.7 million tons of extra smelting capacity coming online this year, ex-China. Which is really going to, you know, keep those fees quite low. So copper demand should remain quite high. And we all know that, you know how much copper we need to go electric, et cetera. That whole story has been done to death. So, I think it does look like this is a sustainable move higher. I wouldn't expect the sharp increases like we've had over the last couple of weeks all the time, but, you know, just a nice grind higher would be fantastic. Because I think I heard the other day, about $4.75 US a pound is where some of these higher marginal copper producers can start coming back online or coming online. So maybe that's an area we look at.
And then that's the supply that comes back into it. Macquarie Bank's, I'm not going to try and do the conversion onto this one, but Macquarie Bank put out a note last week saying it's $9,500.
Yep.
That's going to be a ton. We're not doing pounds, tons, or any of this nonsense on this one. Back off Brussels. So that's what they're saying. $9,500. I got no reason at all why that couldn't be a possibility in the front.
Exactly.
One of the big takeaways that I had talking to some of the gold copper companies at the beginning of the week is just talking about how tight supply is. I know that that's talking their own book and talking up their own price, but they know what they're talking about. They know the holdings that they've got. Alma Metals still has a huge deposit of low grade, and I still don't mind that name as far as it goes. Right, footy tips, and then we've got to go. I'm 2 minutes late for a platform demo.
Westy, you got any tips?
I look at platform demos. Go on. Okay. Yeah, come on.
I was going to say, boys, I can't believe we didn't talk about gold, but we can get maybe another time.
Gold's up, mate.
Yeah, what are we doing? Adelaide.
What are you guys
Adelaide to Beach Long.
Oh, fantastic. I like that one.
Yeah. My multi got carted out last night by the Pies, so I'm probably not in great form at the moment.
It's just the best time to be alive. See you at a grand. See you at a grand final. It's just absolutely just get buried in the first three rounds of the year. It's just brilliant.
You got
Adelaide. My tip is actually Geelong at the line, which is 13.5. Or I think that's tonight's game. If you hear this, paying about $1.90. I think the line's too big, and the Cats will get closer than that. I still think Crows will win, but it'll be closer than that. My other bet, if you don't get that in time, is Port at the line at -30.5 versus the Tigers. I know it's at the G, but it's Boak's 350th, so they'll get up for that, and I think they'll win by 4 or 5 goals. So I think Port at the line on Sunday, I think if you don't get to tonight's Friday night game, pays $1.90. So, yeah.
Okay. That's not bad. Look, I think I just got pipped out last week by the Eels. I think I had 7.5. They lost by 8. It was just one of those line ball things. What are you going to do? Welcome to the show, kids. On later in the week in the NRL, the 24th of March, which is 2 days away from now, meaning it's Sunday, I think the Newcastle Knights will beat the Storm of Melbourne. And that's a bit of a turn-up for that one. Storm missing a lot of players. And that's a play. I don't take any line, take them outright. Still going to pay you about $1.86. Bet with your head, not over it. This podcast is not sponsored by any gambling company. This is just three blokes just thinking what we're going to think. Aside from that, hey, I've got to wrap it
Arsenal
up. I've got a Arsenal demo.
Arsenal to beat Man City at $4. There you go.
Arsenal to beat Man City at $4.
Big one.
Bang.
Manchester.
How about Man City to get extracted? We're all wearing blue too. Look at us, color-coded for Man City. Man City to get extracted from the Premier League.
What?
What's that paying?
On those 115 charges, they'll just mysteriously go away, I think, unfortunately.
just like a Boeing FAA investigation. just get swept under the rug. Okay, guys, that's on that note. I'm going to have to wrap it up now. You have been listening to the Theory of Thing Investor Podcast. I've been joined here by special guests and always amazing to have him on board. Wearing pants, I hope. Definitely wearing a shirt, though. Chris Weston from Pepperstone. To you, my friend.
Thank you.
Heath Moss of HLM Investments. Thanks very much. Stay on the line after I hit the end of recording, boys, so that you can it's got to download the whole thing and whatever. No one needs to know how the sausages are made, but just so you don't switch off. I'll catch you guys next week. Thanks very much for joining us, and stay safe and all the best. Mark well.
Have a good one, everyone.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.